This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community. Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture, Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12, on Joy 94.9.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. Macca and Tass and Paul on the buttons. Fiona is away today. I don't know where she is. I think she's going for a picnic.
Nice. Oh, she needs to have a break. We all need to have breaks occasionally, Macca.
Yeah. Work-life balance, Tass.
Well, that's what it's about. But it also helps to refresh the batteries or something.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we've got this Paul on the buttons, but we actually have another Paul in the studio. We have Paul Zara, former David Jones chief executive and currently the chairman of the Pinnacle Foundation. Good morning to you, Paul.
Good morning.
Great to have you in the
and
studio.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm a little nervous.
No, don't be nervous.
The only reason the previous guest walked out of here without their pants on, so I'm just wondering what's in store for me.
So a little bit of background around that one so that people know what you're talking about. The previous show had this segment where they literally pluck buskers off the street and bring them in to do a bit of a performance. Yeah. And there was a charming young American man called Jamel who came in and sang absolutely beautifully. He brought tears to everyone's eyes. I'm quite serious about it. And he was dressed in shorts and T-shirts. And he came out and he said, now I need to put on some pants. I've no idea what that was about, though.
So he's chosen for his good looks and his good voice.
Well, he actually was extremely good looking. There was no question about it. You did notice. So, Paul, what's it like to be retired?
Well, retired from full-time employment, but now doing a portfolio of interests. So it's a lovely space to be because I'm sort of working when it suits me and doing the things that I enjoy most.
Aren't you a bit young to be doing that, though?
Well, some might say I peaked a little early. I sort of got to my career, sort of went off to a rocking start at a very young stage. I started at 15 as a shop assistant at the local Target store here in Sunshine in Victoria.
That is fantastic.
In Sunshine.
Yes, in Sunshine.
That is fantastic. Yep. Sorry, my people would say shushane.
So I'm a working class girl, yes. And have moved very quickly through the ranks and, you know, the pinnacle of my career was actually running David Jones, which I just
loved. Pardon the pun, of course.
Of course. But and I was just one of those fortunate people that just put my head down and worked really hard and got promoted, was never in a role for too long. I was at David Jones for just on 17 years, actually. Wow. And don't know, it's where my heart is because it was such a great company and still is a great company.
Well, so that means you started working at Target at 15.
You're now going to try and work out my age.
Well, actually,
I don't mind sharing. I'm 52, so I sort of retired from full-time employment at 48. And so some of the things that I'm doing now is sort of chairing the Pinnacle Foundation, which does take up the majority of my week. So we focus on disadvantaged LGBTI youth, partly through a scholarship and also through mentoring. And the scholars tell us that they value equally the scholarship and the mentoring. So it's really powerful. Mm. The sad thing about the role that I've got is that we get about 700 applicants a year and we can only choose 30 out of that group. So
you need more money.
Well, we're always looking for more money. We've got a really dedicated and professional board and a great group of volunteers, but we ask people, you know, whatever they can give, if not any money but their time. It's actually, we're sort of open to anyone that can help us. But, you know, we've got it's a long journey for a long road for equality, as they say, and there's, you know, some of the stories that come out of the scholarships, the scholars are really quite sad.
It's a great program and we've showcased it many times on this very show.
Yes.
Paul, I'd like to go back to you as chief executive.
Yes.
And in your career, as an openly gay man, did you face any challenges or any issues?
I think the simple answer is yes. I mean, every day was a challenge, I guess, because when you're different to everybody else, you really feel that. So there was always...
Not that different, though.
You feel there's a high... Interestingly, you think being in the retail industry, being in fashion, that you would actually... you would fit in. But in fact, when I joined, if I think about my time at David Jones, because that's probably when I started DJs, I started as an out and proud gay man. It was probably in my early 30s then. At that stage, there was no one that I knew that was openly LGBTI, because it was a very traditional company that had very traditional values. So anyone that was different sort of really did stand out. So,
but the floor was full of gay men.
That's the sad thing. So what we didn't see in the early stages of the 90s when I joined David Jones, there was no LGBTI people in senior management levels. They were actually all doing shop assistant type work. So they no one represented at the board level or in senior management level. So I sort of broke that ceiling as I moved through. So I think it's hard if you've got to be able to look up to see, well, actually, that's who I want to be. So there was no sort of role models for me back then, but I feel that I've fulfilled that for other people. So
Were there at the time any... What was the gender representation on the board?
Well, this is an interesting story because when I joined in the 90s, there were predominantly white Anglo-Saxon heterosexual males of a generation.
You probably got it right there, white Anglo-Saxon.
Yes. Yeah, well, it's a good point. And the interesting thing for me
is... people, Mac. Old white men.
Old white men. But they were heterosexuals.
Yeah.
So I think the interesting thing...
Some might be angry, of course.
I'm not angry.
You know, 75% of discretionary shopping is done by women. Mm. So one may argue if there was better gender equity at the board at that time that David Jones may have seen the train smashes that were coming its way. So obviously by the time, there's been lots of change at David Jones. By the time I got into, certainly became the CEO and was sitting on the board, we achieved gender equity. But by that stage, some of the strategic stuff was missed. Mm. So it's part of the reason why I go into the diversity and inclusion space, because I see the true value of de-risking companies through greater diversity and inclusion.
Mm. So give us some examples of the sorts of things that you faced as a gay man where your sexuality became the barrier, if you want, to you doing your role.
Sure. Look, the interesting thing for me, I recall as a senior management going in to present to the board that the first 10 minutes the football was discussed, and
so dull.
So that would immediately put me on the back foot. So I guess for me that really did ostracise me. I felt that level of anxiety, not being able to connect. So you sort of think that's just such a simple story, but if the conversation doesn't unify people, then you immediately realise you're having to work twice as hard. And that's the thing. I always felt as a gay man, I had to work twice as hard to actually fulfil my ambition. Whereas for most others, they don't. They just can be themselves.
So. Paul, I know this is about you and not me, but I want to share a little story.
Please.
For a long time, because I'm not really a football person, I do go to the football because my partner drags me along. I have a cap on the number of times that I go per season, which is 4. And I usually go because I enjoy the crowd rather than the game. But all that aside, I never enjoyed football. And I used to turn up to boardroom tables all the time and meet up with all sorts of business leaders. I'd be crapping on about, somebody kicked this or somebody caught that ball or... And I had no idea what they were talking about. And for a long time, I felt very inadequate. Mm. And for a long time, I felt like I could not participate in this as an equal person. Once I realised that, I thought, actually, I don't have to participate in this.
No.
And I can call it the way it is.
Yes.
And that gave me a completely new sense of confidence. And often I'd say, look, I actually don't watch the football.
Yes.
I'm not interested in the game. But did you see this particular show the other night, or this particular documentary, or this new movie, or this extraordinary exhibition at the gallery? And try to reframe the conversation and
great
make
attitude.
It more. And so it's really about sort of empowering yourself to say, I don't have to do that crap. Let's
agree. Although, interesting, and funnily enough, an interesting fact about me, I've never been to the football and I'm a Victorian.
Never.
Never, ever. So,
I think you're coming with us.
I've got a bad
You're coming
history.
We're taking you to the football.
So, but the interesting thing is, I recall there were many occasions where there'd be senior management would actually have these sort of football team building things that, that used to just horrify me, thinking I have to participate in something that I just don't feel part of. And what was interesting is these football games would go ahead and I would be left at the office to actually man the phones because I was the gay boy left behind.
He can do it. One of the interesting things is, and we've seen this starting to change with the advent of AFL women's games. But often you don't notice it, but, when you're watching the sport on free-to-air TV or the sports segment of the news that's on because you can't be bothered turning it off. And almost without exception, whether it's the cricket, whether it's the football, whether it's rugby, whatever variation of it is, and they'll get someone on there and something's going on and they talk about the boys.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, I've done my hamstring. Oh, yeah, but the boys are being very supportive. What are they all doing, rubbing lemon on it? No. Right? It's actually, it's about exclusion. right? It's about a small group of alpha males playing sport, you know, and then they say very, you know, very nice things about women's football and stuff like this. But you know. And this is the same in the business world.
It's exactly the same. It's interesting. There was one particular manager, one of my colleagues, who actually saw that as a weakness in me, and so he would entice this conversation, which immediately excluded. They excluded me from the conversation. So, you know, I think maybe when I look back now, I probably have, I certainly would know how to handle those situations better today.
Yeah.
But back then, obviously, I didn't.
Yeah, yeah. So what else? Give us some other examples. Because it is interesting to sort of reflect on those.
Yeah.
And it's lessons for people, you know. Like, I mean, I learn all the time, and it'd be interesting to hear how you deal with these situations.
Well, look, I think if you're in an organisation that has employee networks, which is really what's happening today, a lot of really professional services, financial services, a lot of professional companies have, you know, LGBTI employee networks. That's a really good place to be to get that safety and comfort. If you're an organisation that didn't have those formal networks, and David Jones certainly didn't have that, I think by being a gay man running a public company, that was, I think, enough of a strong message. So I was able to, in a position of power, stop a lot of this sort of nonsense that went on. Then I think the tip I would give to anyone that might be listening is that to always align yourself with somebody that has similar values. Now, that may be another LGBTI person, but it also might be an ally that understands you a little bit better, and you feel that level of safety and comfort, because in that, you know, in that unity, you can feel stronger.
You know, if we'd said, you know, think back, Paul, if we'd said 20 years ago that we were going to have that the he's now 2IC at Telstra, but, you know, Micah Bede,
yes,
the CEO of SBS, Alan Joyce at Qantas, yourself at David Jones, and there's a number of others, you know, that the reality is, you know, we are, I like to thought, you know, breaking through the pink curtain.
Yes.
But, you know, again, I often see, you know, and in my job I see it and they go, oh, yes, oh, well, you know, that's Macca and da-da-da-da, and, you know, he's pushing that agenda. And I go, hang on, you're pushing your agenda all the time. And your agenda, it's not in my company, this is in other places I've observed, I make a point, not in the company I work for, but you're pushing your agenda, which is about exclusion. It's about gender exclusion. It's about diversity exclusion. It's about sexual orientation exclusion. You know, so don't talk to me about me pushing my agenda.
Absolutely.
I'm actually open about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm interested in, you know, in terms of leadership, you know, so you serve on PwC's Diversity and Inclusion Committee.
Yeah.
That's really important. You know, other boards and things you do, including startups. If you had your time again, so roll back to, how long were you CEO of DJs?
Four and a half years.
So let's roll back to then.
Yes.
What would you do, or what would you think you'd be able to do differently now, should you be in that position again? And I know there's been nearly as many DJ CEOs.
There has been about another.
You could get the call any day.
Yeah, by tenure, mine's been the longest serving, which is hilarious. But regardless,
what would you do different?
Look, I think I would have made the staff discount permanent when you left the company. That's the first thing I would have done. It's my biggest regret. I think when I look back at my time, you know, I was actually, if not the first CEO on an ASX 200 that came out gay. And people say, well, is that a big deal? Well, actually,
it is.
You know, I think it is, because I sort of, and I remember going to the first board meeting after, you know, appeared for being the first ASX CEO to comment about marriage equality. And I just, my view is very simple, that we treat our customers the same and our employees the same. I probably, I think I could have done more from an LGBTI perspective, because I think I was
in terms of promoting LGBTI equality issues.
Yeah, I think so, because I think I was. There were so many. We were so heavily disrupted, and to be honest with you, that disruption's continued. In some may argue it's worse today than it was during my time, but it was certainly it was what I call the perfect storm. And when you're dealing with so much crap, I guess it's hard to then see yourself about your responsibilities as a role model. And I think that's what's driving me today to actually make up for that time, because I didn't have time during that period to really give back to the community. And, you know, I went into corporate world as, you know, we're all referred to as the gay and lesbian community, and came out and was LGBTI, and we've been adding lots of other letters, which is great. So the first thing I did was say, well, actually now I've got this amazing brand that I can actually give back to the community, and I'm doing that today, but I would have loved to have been able to do both at the time.
We'd love to talk more about that, sure. And would like to hear more about your reflections in leadership roles and what's occurring in your old workplace, of course, as well. We've had some lots of messages from our listeners, and in particular 317. We love hearing from 317. 317, clearly you and 317 have something in common, and that is your not dislike, but disinterest in football. So yeah. There you go. You're not the only person. One of our listeners likes that as well. Macca, you know we love getting comments and feedback from our listeners.
We love it. I can barely contain myself sometimes.
We've had a lovely message from Justin. Justin from South Bank says, personal thank you to Paul for being out at Target. It was his courage that gave him the courage to do the same. Isn't that lovely, Paul?
That's very sweet.
I think that's makes what, a difference. It makes a difference to people.
That's what this is all about. Yeah. You know, sharing stories, being open, talking to people. It actually gives people role models and examples. And
it's never it's never easy.
No,
but you know, I always joke with people that I'm a professional poofter. That I've leveraged. You know, when I was a motoring journalist, if a car company didn't give me a car to drive, I'd accuse them of being homophobic. Worth a treat. But, you know, it is important, you know, that we all need mentors, we all need role models, we all need people that we can say, well, you know, Paul's the CEO of this company, he's an out gay man, then, you know, there is an opportunity for me to be an out gay man or an out lesbian or any of the LGBTIQ and to progress. That's why it's important, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think it's important too that for all the LGBTI people that they do live their authentic life, because they've got a responsibility, particularly the older community where, you know, we want to have more role models. It's about being out but visibly out, I guess. And that's the important thing. You know, we all get to live our life but also equally give back to the next generation.
So, Paul, tell us about what's happening in our retail space. I mean, it is like a really...
It's rooted.
That's the quick term, yeah.
I mean, I was in your old haunt yesterday, right. Sunshine. And, I mean, even Sunshine, the strip shopping strips are just... It's really sad, isn't it?
Look, it's an interesting place to be because, I mean, it's sort of nice for me now. I sit on the outskirts and I look in and actually without the stress of it and actually see what's happening. And it's concerning on many fronts, but the world's changing, you know. And the history in Australia actually for retail is that because we're so geographically widespread, to get sales growth, we just open up more stores. And now, of course... That's a problem. So a lot of our retailers now have these legacy leases, particularly department stores that they've signed up for. Some of them go up to 25 years that they just can't get out of. So sitting in the PwC role, I chair the Diversity Inclusion Board, but I equally do some retail advisory work. And, you know, I have a list of, you know, shortcuts to advise retailers. And the biggest thing I tell them is reduce their physical footprint and invest heavily in digital, because that's the only way to survive the future. So I do still think the future is bright for retailers, but there's a massive transformation that's going on. Less physical stores, heavily digital, and the more commodity the type of product that people are selling, the more that will move to an online experience. So nobody wants to be sort of buying, you know, toilet paper and nappies and things like that. That's not a shopping experience that people value. So that's more likely to be bought online than in a store. So this massive sort of, disruption that's going on that will continue going on.
So a board's not listening? Are they just not happening? They're not following community consumer sentiment?
Yeah, that's an interesting topic, because, I mean, that's part of the problem, because I guess when you look at boards today... Generationally, there's a massive gap, but the I call it the 3 Ds that you need skill set wise to be on a board in retail, and most of the boards don't have it, which is digital, understanding the digital landscape, and the second one is diversity, and there's a third one which has just escaped me, but it'll come to me.
The 3 Ds,
exactly.
I only know two.
I remember the two. So there's digital and disruption. So if they're not sort of across the digital landscape, then that's a problem, because if retailers are going to think, well, to get growth, we're going to just open up more new stores. So that's the old world. That's sort of going to conventional wisdom. It's now about investing heavily in the digital.
I think one area...
Diversity was the third, by the way. Sorry. Yes.
I think we're... retailers, the ones that, for me, that work for me, the best system, yeah, of course, we all order stuff, and, you know, you talk about toilet paper and might be dishwashing liquid, yeah, you might order some bulk of that or you buy it. The click and collect customer. This is an opportunity that retailers are not leveraging. And I'll tell you why. I bought a new barbecue yesterday online. I'd researched it, bought it from a national chain, chose the store I was to pick it up from. 42 minutes from when I clicked it, I got the phone call to say it's ready to pick up. Said I'll pick it up on such and such time on Sunday. Yeah, they said, well, actually, we open at 10, but, you know, 11 to 11.15 is good because it's actually a bit quiet come then. And what that then does is present an opportunity when you pick that up, rather than going to the back of the store to a grubby old loading dock, okay, try and have it in store, and then the person's, and some, I've done this, JB over the road have done it when I bought something, oh, you've just bought this, Mr. McCarthy, have you got extra batteries, whatever, or, you know, is there something else?
Yeah.
That click and collect is, you know, you put back the personal element.
Yes.
And I think a lot of retailers are missing out on that. The ones that have done it, with me, with I've bought something else.
Yeah, I mean, that's what
I've
we call
something else.
The art of being a merchant, I guess, and making sure you've thought through all of those things. I mean, click and collect is this massive trajectory. It's certainly because I launched it at David Jones, so I remember it quite well, but it was the biggest growth. And it actually, where that thinking came was from John Lewis in the UK.
Yes.
So we used to watch the other department stores around the world, because the beauty about department stores is it's not rocket science. It's, there's international models you can actually take the thinking from.
Well, you wouldn't follow Macy's, would you?
Well, so you sort of got to, you look at that. I'm not going to get into that conversation, but the inspiration sort of comes from that. But click and collect's a major opportunity for retailers, and I guess that most retailers that have done it and done it well are doing well out of it.
So, so Paul, you know, when I reflect on what's happening at DJs itself, there's been not only you know, a turnstile of CEOs, but also a massive exodus, you know, at the board most recently.
Yes.
I mean, just last week there was a number of resignations. What's going on?
Well, I'm not inside the tent, so I probably can't answer that question. Like, it's heartbreaking to watch because here is the oldest department store in the world still trading under its original name. So I guess if you think about the heritage, it's older than Selfridges, it's older than Harrods, it's older than the Sydney Harbour Bridge, older than Vegemite. You know, it goes on, you know, it's history. So you have to hope that at some point internally these things will get sorted out, because it's destabilising for the team. So I have many friends that are still working at David Jones, and you know, and I hope for them that this they're going through a very rough patch.
I love that old saying, the fish rots from the head.
Well, you said that, I did.
There's a couple of questions.
Yes. I like this one, Macca. From 317.
For Paul, who does he see as the next generation of leaders in politics and business? Can he name any people he admires now?
Okay, that's a good question. I guess the next generation, when I won't sort of pick out names, but I think what I can say is that what we're going to see is a lot more women in roles. I think,
thank God,
you know, and thank God for that, because I think for the LGBTI community, I always say this, if we had more women in senior leadership, then half of our job would be done, because I think we've got a natural affiliation from a gender perspective. So there's no doubt when I look at the politicians, and I won't go into names, but the ones that I admire most are women. There's very few of them, so it'd be very easy for you to work that through. From a business point of view, I think, you know, again...
What, Michaela Cash and Pauline Hanson?
That would not be my pick. Oh, thanks for that, Tess.
Put those two in a lift would be great. No, it would be a great fight, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that nearest fire exit, maybe. I don't know, but anyway, you may suggest that. But I think we're going to see... we are going to see a lot of diversity, in particular from a gender point of view. But what I'm hoping for is that we get more people that are prepared to sort of put themselves forward, have the courage and the stamina also to actually put themselves forward, and that we will see a changing landscape. So I think what the marriage equality debate taught me was that, in fact, we can unify for change, and that business do have a part to play in societal change.
Yes, they do.
So I think we're seeing lots of amazing sweeping changes that sometimes we don't sort of sit back and think they wouldn't have happened a decade ago.
Do you think our political leaders are out of step with community sentiment?
Oh, definitely. I think they're not – well, for a start, from a gender point of view, they don't represent – in Australia, it's about 50-50 men, male, female. That's not what we see in Parliament.
Actually, it's 49-51.
Well, there you go. I sort of rounded it up.
Like, 51 women.
Oh, 51 women. There you go. Okay. Well, you know, that's the point. I guess that it's out of step, but purely from a gender perspective and a generational perspective as well, I think.
I think the – you know, the other thing, Paul, is we're seeing – such a disconnect, and you see, you know, the success Karen Phelps has had, you know, the other independents, you see, you look at On the government side, you know, someone you know well, Senator Dean Smith. You know, we have the Deputy Leader of the Labor Party and potentially Deputy Prime Minister, Tanya Plibersek. And on the Liberal side, well...
Angry white old men.
Nationals, you've got...
angry white old men.
Angry white old men and, you know, Bridget McKenzie's Deputy Leader of the National Party lives in Elwood.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, very country. and, you know, we do need to see some more diversity. I want to ask, I know you've got to go, you've got a flight to catch. What is your message to young LGBTI folk, no matter where they are, no matter what they're doing, what is to you the thing that is, obviously, think about a Pinnacle Foundation scholarship if you can, but what is the most important message you would give them from your life experience?
I think it's about courage, and to be honest with you, it's simple. It's never give up, never give up, never give up, because what it does need, it actually needs for all of us to feel that responsibility. The more LGBTI people that come out and be out and visible, the more normal it'll appear to the straight community, and I think that's the important message.
We are the new normal.
We are the new normal, and you know what? Our difference should be celebrated because we do bring a different perspective. You know, we've got many strengths being, and I'm, you know, I say to myself, you know, I was spent most of my early teens being regretful that I was gay, but now I look back now and certainly that's obviously changed. I'm very grateful that I'm gay because it gives me a completely different perspective on the world. And, you know, I see myself, you know, for what, you know, I can't come out of a retail world and not be a capitalist because that's what the job is. But I am a capitalist with socialist values, and I think it's a really nice place to be.
Paul, it's great to have you in the studio.
Thank you both.
Thank you for your time.
Inspirational. Thank you.
Next time you're in Melbourne, we're going to the footy.
And we'll do 2 hours.
But we're not wearing scarves or any of that shit.
It's been a pleasure for me on many levels because my first introduction to the outside world was through Joy FM when I used to listen in on my earphones on my analogue clock radio, and that's how I sort of got to know what was available to me. So thank you, guys.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.